Okay, I'd first ensure that we've all silenced our cell phones, and I'd ask you to please help me welcome Sharon C. from Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Sharon Crane, alcoholic. I got two bottles, now I feel at home. I don't have my boots on. I used to like to drink port wine because it fit in my boots. And then it was in there with my mace, so I had a few things in case I needed it. But anyway, thank you, Lee, for asking me. It's nice to have a party with you guys and have such great food. And thank you, Billy Wonka, for that lovely piece of exquisite fudge there. I'm getting the inside flavor here, so it's good. And Cindy and Victor, Don and Victor, thank you so much for organizing this, and I hope everybody had a good time. I know I did. Thank you, Teresa from Culver City, who drove me. I live south of the airport, and we had about four, oh, thank you. Thank you. What a gentleman. We had about 4 hours of getting to know each other a little more and having some music and talking, and so it's always good. I sponsored Teresa a long time. She had a woman named Pat Hodges before, who was married to a man named Clint Hodges, if any of you knew him. And then before that, she had a nun as her sponsor, who I sponsor now, who, if you hear my story, you're going to go, do you sponsor a nun? I get to tell Sheila every Wednesday when we talk, don't worry, have faith, Sheila, it'll be okay. So we all laugh at Alcoholics Anonymous because we probably should be dead. I know I should. So I'm on borrowed time here, and life is good, and it's always good. I think once you've had a spiritual awakening, there's joy, no matter what goes on in your life, whether it's, you know, happy or sad, or people are married babies, or there's, you know, death and destruction, you know, and whatever's going on, I have gratitude, and gratitude is linked to joy. So I am a joyful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Most days I wake up grateful to be in my own bed, grateful to know that the ceiling, and grateful to know what I'm, my purpose is. I think it was Don Fritz that said one of the most deprived situations a soul can be in is to have no purpose. And I had no purpose, and I was extremely deprived when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Plus, I was an ember of life. There was not much left in me, and I was done. So is it Ron? I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that you're done. I hope you don't have any good ideas for a while, because my good ideas got me to the rooms. But if I wouldn't have been so tired on that day, I don't know if I would be here. If my mother wouldn't have said, no, I can't help you anymore, go to the Salvation Army, I don't know if I would be here. If I wouldn't have been a phone number sitting in front of me that I didn't know was a member in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and recognized my disease, I don't know if I would be here. And she gave me a phone number of a stranger to call because I needed a place to stay. I didn't know that I was calling a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I would have known that, I probably wouldn't be here. But that's what it was for me on August 20th, 1975. There was no friendly direction. And I ended up in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I've been here ever since. And it's pretty phenomenal to me because I'm 40, going at 41 years sober, and I'm only 39 years old. So that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous right there. But life is good. I'm an Iowa girl, and I don't know about you, but I couldn't wait to get out of there. I don't know. I have a normal family and three normal siblings, and I was always looking for the mothership. And I was always a little more sensitive than everybody, and there was love in my house. There was, you know, tradition in my house. There was, you could have emotions in my house. I remember when my sister slammed the door. If you wanted to get up from the table, my father had three girls in a row, right in a row. So when we were hitting 13, 14, 15, it was a little crazy around the dinner table. My brother's the last one born, and he said, I never got in the bathroom growing up. We were always in the bathroom. But we can have emotions. You just had to excuse yourself from the table if you wanted to, you know, go have your emotions. And my sister, I remember once she didn't do it. She slammed the door and the crucifix fell off the wall. And it was like, you know, I was so happy to have somebody else be more emotional than me. I've still never let her forget that. And of course, I'm on her telling her she's adopted. And I, you know, I don't know. I just know I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I was a young citizen of America at 16 years old. I went to the White House. I had lunch with Lucy Bird, Linda Bird, and Lady Bird with 49 other women, one from every state in this country. And we were chosen as the Young Citizens of America. And I won this contest, and I was a little drunk with the boys from Virginia because I had met them about 10 in the morning. We went to some floor that nobody was on, somewhere near the Capitol, and we were drinking beer. And I remember going through the reception line thinking, I better be careful. So at 16, I already knew I better be careful. Now, I was your future at 16, which was scary because things were going to change rather quickly as I discovered alcohol, as I did when I was like 13 years old. And it was Canadian Club and Schlitz beer, and you know, my trainer bra woke up. I danced with the football players. It was one of those nights that I remember part of it. I didn't know I learned to drive a car. There was a lot going on, and I woke up feeling rotten, and I couldn't wait to do it again because there was that, all the voices in my head that kept me up at night that told me things like, you're not going to see your grandfather again. He's going to die before you see him again, so you better give him a big, long hug as you leave. And I was just kind of tortured by my head, and it was like all of those voices got down to one big voice when I was drinking, and it just said, let's party. And I was like at peace with all those voices. Now, I didn't know that, alcoholism centers in the mind, whether I'm drinking or not drinking, until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought, I'm not sharing these thoughts with people, because one of my good friends when I grew up, we were camping out one night, and she said, tell me some secrets. Well, I told her some secrets. And then she didn't want to play with me for 2 years. So I was like, don't tell that little part of your mind that is a little odd. So I learned to kind of keep it wrapped up. And that's okay. I went through school. I did what I was supposed to do. I went off to a university. I had a fiance, and I found him cheating on me. One night driving by the sorority house, and he was kissing his tutor goodbye at the door, and I'm driving by going, I think that's my fiance, and that's his tutor, and he's thanking her a little too much, and so he's a wrestler. He was a university wrestler, so he was pretty good, and I waited. I got some Schlitz malt liquor. I sat outside his apartment. I waited for the lights to go off, and I let myself in. And I sat on him and started pummeling him. I was so mad. I couldn't believe that. Of course, I'm on the floor in 2 seconds, right? And I'm pinned. I can't do anything. And I'm spitting at him, and I'm so mad. And that was it, of course. I'm not going to cry. My mom said, aren't you going to cry? I said, no. And nobody said I couldn't cry. Alcohol had already started to allow me to be hardened up, which was going to be good because I was going to need to be hardened up for the trip I was going to have with alcohol in my back pocket. And that was kind of the beginning of I remember my mother giving me a look like, you're not going to cry about this? And I remember I said no, and I sat at the table, and I ate a whole bag of Oreo cookies in front of her. I was like stuffing it down. And so I was a little mad at the world about, the world of men. And so I never really opened my heart up. I just didn't do it. I just kind of bricked that part up of me. And then after about a year of college, it was the 60s, so it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. A lot of stuff going on. And I am a search seeker. I'm a truth seeker. So I am out there looking for truth in everything there is. And, I'd find it, but it would melt before I could write it down, or it was somewhere on that vinyl. We used to listen to vinyl, and I was, where is that? There was truth. I heard it last night. And I was really on a mission to find some sort of truth. I mean, when I was little, I loved Gandhi, and, I'm a little Catholic girl, but I was, like, really looking for something. And so I was finding the truth in alcohol because it allowed me to not care. I don't know if that was my truth, but it allowed me to exhale and not care. I don't care what you think of me. I don't care where I'm going. I don't care that King Alcohol asked me to push my artistic talent across the bar at one point and continue down the path. King Alcohol asked me to push the love of my family and being a member of that family across the bar.
Can alcohol allow me to push my dignity across the bar and keep on drinking? You know, anytime there was a fork in the road, it was King Alcohol or something good, it was King Alcohol was winning out, because that's my running buddy now. And somewhere along the line, I couldn't go home anymore with, please stay out of your dad's way, you break his heart. My father and I had had a lot of, they were emotional. He would ask me what was wrong with me. I would come home from school and I would be depressed, or I cut my wrist once. My solutions to life weren't really great, and he was trying to understand why I was so angry all the time. And he would ask me and I would tell him, and what I was doing I would tell him, and then he'd want to help me and I wouldn't let him. And I think that's one of the cruelest things you can do to somebody, is to tell them everything about you that they want to help and then not let them help and let them sit there with that information. And one of the things I used to always say to my mom and my dad were, leave me alone, I'm not hurting anyone but me. And that's the biggest lie, I think, because they say, you know, Ron, you walked in here tonight. They say when somebody walks into Alcoholics Anonymous, there's 10 people, whether you know it or not, whose lives have changed. That's like, I heard that from quite a few Al-Anons, that 10 people's lives are changed for the better, that they know we're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's not about you already, Ron, sorry. Just keep thinking it is for a long time. That's okay, you know, we get it. So I would say that, and I know that, you know, being a sponsor and being sponsored, I believe in strong sponsorship, and I think the truth, you know, when the truth is told, there better be a solution right behind it. When you have a moment of truth, there better be a solution, and Alcoholics Anonymous has never disappointed me with the truth and a solution. There's always been a solution to whatever I bring to a sponsor, whatever life has thrown at me, there is a solution. And I'm so grateful for that this, you know, we're 81 years old in one day today. And it's amazing that we are the lucky ones to live in a time and space where you don't like this meeting, you can go somewhere else and like a meeting. I mean, it's not like they had to go a week in between meetings. A week. I mean, they had to find God in there somewhere. They really did, you know, and they had to have contact with each other. And, you know, it's like they had to call up and check on each other and make sure people were doing okay and meet them. There was a lot of, they had to have a lot of fellowship because there was a week in between meetings. You know, I get a little squirrely if something happens and I get a week in between meetings. So I have so much respect for just all the little seconds and inches that Alcoholics Anonymous got here. And I really respect the primary purpose and the traditions and what we have here. Because, I don't know, it doesn't seem like my son needs it, but maybe his kids will need it. And I know that's a whole generation removed from me or two. But I would hope that if that happens, that if an alcoholic walks into this room and a few years down the road, they would find one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, which was the key to why this worked. Singleness of purpose. And I don't know if I'm in a strong group that has that singleness of purpose, that has strong sponsorship, that has traditions, that has history. We have history. My group that I'm in is 53 years old. We're 53 years old strong, and we're huge. We have a lot of other, you know, other groups during the week that are smaller and different types of meetings, you know, from stags to step studies to, you know, book readings to just all kinds of other meetings, speaker meetings, participation meetings. But on Wednesday night, we get together, and there's 800 strong of us. We all come together, the meeting of the tribes every Wednesday night, and that's been going on for 53 years, and I'm impressed with it. That when we leave, you wouldn't even know we would have been there. It's cleaner than when we came. The great coffee at that meeting for that many people, because Johnny Harris makes it. He's got 55 years of sobriety, so he knows how to make it good. And, it's phenomenal to me that I have the amount of time I have, and I walk into that room, and there's a whole bunch of people that have more time than me. And I know we're losing them. Those of us that have been around for a while, I know we're losing them. And those of us that have been here are getting shoved to that front row, whether we want to be here or not. You know, there's a spot, boom, you're up.
and, you know, it lets you know your own mortality is coming sometime, but it also lets you know you better respect what's here and keep it strong and keep showing up. Keep showing up. And I have smart feet, and I've been trained to have smart feet. Even when this says no, the feet show up. So I love my feet. Pedicure, love them, take care of them, make sure that they're happy, because they have gotten me through so much in my 40-plus years here, believe me. So anyway, I just, come with me. All right, so, you know, I'm in college, I'm not working, I'm not painting, it's not happening. My father and I can't sit and talk together anymore because I break his heart. He looks at me sideways. He knows way too much about me. I got the family priest drunk with me and ended up at a sit-in in the student union. And, you know, now they're not even going to let me near the White House because I'm protesting and I'm mad. Anything, what are we mad about? I'll just go, you know, and just give me my booze and give me some of my diet pills from all those diet doctors because, you know, I got finals. And let's go. You know, what are we going to sing? We Shall Overcome. What are we doing? I'm here. You know, I hitchhiked 2,000 miles ago, and I hitchhiked north, south, east, and west, and seconds and inches. We're lucky by seconds and inches. You know, you pass out, your head just grazes the end of that coffee table. You know, people choke on their own vomit. We're really lucky to be here. If you're alcoholic, this is a gift. And the gift has been given if you're here, and your job is to give it away. So there I am, and, you know, I'm New York City, and that's not the answer. I'm in Colorado, and that's not the answer. And I met Bob Dylan, came to California, and I think it was Bob Dylan, I'm not really sure, but I'm at a commune, and I get kicked out of the commune because I drink. And I drank their bog wine one night because I had no booze, and they were pissed. And so they took me on a picnic at Mount Baldy, me and this dog that didn't like getting stoned either. You know, so me and the dog, they left us there. I wondered why they made me pack up all my things. Like, well, no, we're just going on a picnic, and then they left me and the dog there in Mount Baldy. So I'm a survivor. I got down. I found somebody. I got where I needed to go, and I go back home, and I have a gallbladder that's not working. I have early stages of pancreatitis. I'm not even 21 years old yet, and I'm deep in my disease. And my mom said, please just stay out of your dad's way because you break his heart. Something you don't want to hear. Went to Thanksgiving with my grandparents like we did every Thanksgiving, and I got sat with the children at the kids' tables. They didn't let me with the adults. It was like, you know, another reason to be mad. They didn't know what to do with me. Nobody in my family is alcoholic. I am it. Now, there were teetotalers. My mother's side marched with Carrie Nation back when there was prohibition, so maybe they didn't drink. I don't know. But I'm it. So they didn't know what was wrong with me. And it was like they were a little bit afraid of me because you never knew if I was going to sob on you, you know, sob, fall in your lap and sob, or if I was going to stab the turkey or something. They just didn't know how I was going to act. So that's why they sent me with the kids. And I sat out, it's funny what you remember, I sat outside, it had just snowed, so it was just snowing and snowed, and I looked at everybody in my grandmother's front window, and they were having their dessert and having their coffee and everything they were doing after, and I just sat there and I just thought, I'm not part of them. You know, and that was the day that King Alcohol asked for my family, and I shoved it. And I ended up in another commune, but it was organic. And those people work hard. They, you know, we had to chop wood, we had to split wood, we didn't have any. If you want to make bread, you have to have the wheat grinder out, bring in the organic wheat berries, and then you have to grind it into flour, and then you have to do the whole thing about, this is how we made bread. And if you wanted tea, you had to start the wood stove. And I just thought, oh my God, these people are boring. And they just drank little glasses of organic wine, and they said, why don't you just smoke this? And I said, where's the wine? You know, at least you can afford some wine here. So I would go get some cheap wine, and I would drink, and then they would look at me and go, why do you have to act like that? Why can't you just smoke this? And I would just hiss at them and throw their Pete Seeger records across the room and kick their banjo and tell them they're all boring and And then I would feel bad, and then I would be remorseful, and then I would have a hangover, and then I would sit in the Hootenannies and sip that little organic dandelion wine and play the spoons, and then I could only do that for so long, and then I would have to get drunk. I would have to get drunk. The craving was unbelievable. And they would just look at me like, what's wrong with you? Why do you have to act like that? And so that was short-lived. It wasn't that short because they left, and they left me with the crop we grew. We grew a crop, and it was organic. And they went and did tribal therapy, and I got drunk and screamed at the sheep, and I was glad they were gone. And it was heaven because I was there alone with the dog and the cat and the horse and the crop. And my friend Clarence the farmer would come on the tractor at night because he was the alcoholic of the neighborhood too, and he had licenses had been removed because he had too many DUIs in the state of Wisconsin. So he would drive his tractor and he would go get the wild turkey is what we would drink, and he would bring the wild turkey and we would drink, and he wouldn't put in his teeth some nights, and we'd sing, and he was my buddy, and you know, I didn't shave my legs for like a year, you know, and yeah, I didn't care. And you know, I went up to do the windmill, and the windmill would be going, I'd stand up there, and I felt like ants were crawling my legs. It was this experience of having hair on your legs. I've never had that. It was like, all right, bring it on. I got my wine, and the storm's coming. And so eventually those people wanted me out of there. We had 85 acres of organic land, and I was going to turn this crop into some money, and I'm leaving town. I don't care. You people are boring. And I came home and the wood stove was gone. I mean, they were moving things out. And I went to do this big deal so I could get out of town. And I was drinking and my dog got in with me. And I ended up in this town with this deal I was supposed to have. And I forgot the stuff back on the farm, 45 minutes back. And I turned around, and this is why my head is not my friend. These are the decisions I make, you know, whether to get in the car or not get in the car when you're hitchhiking. I always got in the wrong car. But this is my head that, you know, I turned around and there's a carnival and there's a Ferris wheel. I can hear the calliope going with it, you know, and I can hear the music of the carnival. And I said, I always wanted to be a gypsy. And I went over there and I got a job. And he said, show up in the morning. I drank some tequila with the owner and I put my crop, as all I could put in the car anyway, some clothing and painted the sun on my hood of my car and joined the carnival. And I had a shooting gallery and it was my joint, that's what they called it. And they liked me because I had crop. And, and it was like I had my flash, which were I bought my teddy bears. And, you know, and I met a lot of, really all of you there. Full of alcoholics, full of crazy people, the kind of people that were on the run. I loved it. Let me get out of this organic community, please. And so I called my mother from Arkansas, and she said, you what? My little mother in Iowa gets a phone call. Mom, I joined the carnival. You shouldn't. It's like, what? It's like I could hear her crying. And I went, come on, Mom, I'm writing a book. That's what I said to her. This is my chapter in my book. You know, it's like I didn't even have to say I'm not hurting anyone but me, leave me alone. I was justifying all of this. And she had to go, you know, not hurting it. My mother had to go up there and take care of the horse that was out. The cat that had been kicked by the horse needed to go to the vet. All of her antique furniture she had given me because she thought I was starting a life. I mean, when we came home that Christmas, me and this guy, I mean, that Christmas that I was in the organic farm, we had maple syrup, we had tapped maple trees, and we had these little, you know, I don't know what they were, the logos of the little farm, and she, you know, she thought, well, maybe this will work for her. But now I'm with a carnival in Arkansas, and so she had to go back up. That was like a five-hour trip back and forth, and she had to take care of all of that. And I don't think anything of it. You know, and with Matt Armstrong shows, we're in, you know, we're getting kicked out of Opelousas, Louisiana because I made somebody, you know, and he's starting to get a little upset with the, I'm drinking tequila. I am not a nice person. And that's my favorite is Jose Cuervo Gold. No salt, no lime, nice and neat, double rock glass to the top, knock it back.
don't bother with the rest of the stuff. I want to get, as Norm Alpe said, get me downtown now. That's what I wanted. And that's what Jose Cuervo did for me. But I didn't want to give up my teddy bears on some night. So these kids would say, come on, lady, I knocked three down. I supposed to knock three targets down. I said, you little whiner, you did not. And I'd pop one up. You know, I'm going to go tell my dad, you go whine to your dad. You know, then the dads would come, and then the fights would start, and then my mates would come out, and then we would get closed. The police would close the show in the town. So Matt wasn't very happy with me. He was so not happy with me that about, I don't know, two or three stops later, which was Bogalusa, Louisiana. Yeah, that, it's like it sounds. Like it sounds. And we ended up opening the door one morning, and in came St. Washington Parish Finest, and they knew exactly where to find everything, and it was just for personal use, but they thought I was selling. That's what they got me for, sales and possession. And I went off to jail, and my dog went off to jail, and my new boyfriend went off to jail with his pet skunk named Crank went off to jail. So we were quite a little show at Bogalusa, I'll tell you. And I didn't have any fresh alcohol. And I was having these DTs. I didn't really realize what was going on, but I was having these DTs until I met the guy making his own stuff that was, you know, we got it worked out with his hold your nose and drink it down, and it worked. But I had about a week in there that I had no fresh alcohol, and I was stark raving crazy. And I want to always remember, I'm going to Paris at the end of this month. Now, that's, I like saying that. It's kind of fun for me to say I'm going to Paris because, you know, 3 years I've wanted to go to Paris. I did go 3 years ago for a little bit, but that, you know, that's the name of my book that I was going to write, which I never drank in Paris. And my second sponsor smoked pot in Paris and gave up 21 years. And I'm going to Paris, and I know, you know, there's meetings, but there's also booze and wine, and, you know, so I'm saying this out loud, and I'm saying this to myself that I want to remember that day a week after being locked up in Bogalusa lockup, that they cuffed me and threw me in a car and took me to this building and threw me in there, and they're sat by Dad from Iowa. I want to remember how I felt that day. I don't want to ever forget that moment. I hope you have a moment when you think about, oh, I never drank to Paris or whatever, that I want to remember that day to keep me here, because I felt like something on the bottom of your shoe. And my dad did the right thing. He got on a plane with his checkbook and found me and hired a lawyer and a bail bondsman and found me. And when I walked in there with pieces of cuts of my skin out, because I was picking at cuts on my skin, I was so crazy, that's how he saw his daughter, unwashed, cuts on her face and her hands and her arms. We didn't lock eyes. There was no hug. There was no, how's mom? There was no, are you doing okay? There's just sideways glances with me and Dad. And there's this guy who ended up being the lawyer hired. There's this guy who ended up being the bail bondsman. And they took my dad's money, and they didn't let me out. When my dad left, I went back. And I got stuck in there for a while, and then they kicked me out, and I found the French Quarter of New Orleans. And if you're going to have a probation officer down in the French Quarter, you meet in a bar, you know. It's like just the way it was. And I drank hard and heavy, hard and heavy, hard and heavy. And I lived there for almost 3 years, and it was fun, and it was great, and it was crazy, and it was blackouts, and it was wake up in Florida, and it was insane. And going, that guy that I got busted with right now, his probation officer ended up turning him into his parole officer from St. Louis, and so he had to go back. And that was after being with this guy for two crazy years of black eyes and knife fights and things that I thought were love. And my dad and mom never, ever did that. And now this is what I'm looking for. That's given a big piece of my soul to King Alcohol. Because that's how I felt alive. It was with a little intensity going on. And
So he went to St. Louis, and I went out. One day I woke up, I decided to go find him and discuss why he left me. And everybody was saying, you're crazy, don't do it. But all the drag queens said, pack me up and go, because I kept my clothing. You know, I had a lot of drag queen friends down there, and they showed me how to put gold glitter over a black eye and make it like shooting stars. So it was good. Now we helped each other out through our alcoholism. And you know, the French Quarter is like you could pass out and come to and pass out and come to and spend 2 days in my favorite bar. It was just, we were drinkers like crazy. And I was never going to go without fresh alcohol after that experience in jail, ever. And I didn't until I got to you. And so, I went and found that guy, and he got off his Harley and took his helmet and cracked it open the window and crashed it and pulled me through and spit in my face, and a police car pulled up, or it would have gotten nasty, because I found him. I was looking for him, and I found him. And that's when I let go of the relationship, because I hang on and hang on and hang on. It doesn't matter if, you know, I'm hanging on your leg all the way out the door if I'm not done yet. I mean, that's the way I drank, and that's the way I lived. If I'm not done yet, you know, I got a death grip on whatever it is, whether it's an idea or a person. And so I let go of that relationship and came back to the French Quarter, and things seemed to be different. I seemed to have something called alcoholic stuttering from time to time. I seemed to get catatonic when I wanted to speak from time to time. I had a lot of DTs from time to time that would wake me up. I don't know if they were seizures. I have no idea that I would come to and have to drink. I ended up in West Hollywood on my way to Hawaii, because I got fired from my job at the CD bar where they were supposed to dance with them and buy me a drink, and I got fired for having a bad attitude. And I don't want to dance with you. Buy me the drink, see ya. You know, it was like, you're supposed to dance with them too. And it's like, I don't care, I'll see ya. You know, I'm out of here, which was always my one finger peace sign as I left. And I ended up in Barney's Beanery, and I was on my way to Hawaii, and I didn't make it, blessedly so. I finally made Hawaii when I was 20 years sober. It took me a long time to get there. But I was on my way to Barney's Beanery, and I was on my way to Hawaii, and I didn't make it. And this girl was really drunk one night. She had her Alcoholics Anonymous book under her arm. And she had, I guess, a court card. I didn't know what it was, but she had to get something signed, so everybody was signing it at the bar. And she had to go to a meeting, and she was really drunk, and the bartender took away her keys and said, you're not driving, I'm calling you a cab. And so I was like, all right, good for you, Chris, go to A&A. We all got big toasts as she went out the door. I didn't know what it was. I was embarrassed for her, really. I mean, I just thought, wow, she can't handle it. She's got to go to A&A. And so I'm on my way out to Palm Springs to have a little party with some guys I met, and I'm 175 pounds of bloated, toxic, alcoholic mess, no gallbladder, liver spots on my face, and I'm wearing a Panama hat and a big red dashiki. And I have no place to live and no place to bathe, and I have my backpack with my book, Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass, you know, because I'm going to be here now in the world, you know, and that was my current seeking. And then we go out to Palm Springs. I'm on the back of a Harley, and all the people are coming in to get gas, and they're shiny cars, and we're getting gas, and I'm sitting there, I'm looking at all the silly people with their silly shiny cars. I'm cleaning it up for you. And their silly lives and their silly middle class, you know, families, and I'm free. Oh. And I was such a prisoner of alcoholism, I had no idea. No idea. Even in that insanity. And those guys left me at the club because I was too obnoxious for them. And they left me there, and I guess I got in the car with somebody I didn't know who didn't like me, and I came to, and my jaw was being broken in three places, and my nose was broken, and I had a concussion, and I was drug around and abused and left outside of town in a shallow ditch. And I heard the car door slam, and there was something inside of me that made a decision that was not me. It's that great fat deep down within. Because what it said, because I came through long enough to hear it, even in my blackout concussion, I came to long enough to hear the car door slam and think that survivor in me said, you got to get up and move, they're coming back.
But what I heard was a voice that said, get up, I want to live. 25 and I didn't care about living. Let's let it be over fast. I had been next to people that had been shot and killed. Let's be over fast. I don't want my mom to worry anymore. I don't want God to have to track me down because I'm not talking to God for a lot of years. I don't want my sisters and my brother to have to worry anymore about their sister. My one sister mom gave me a ring that would protect me. It was like, what? And my brother, even my brother, who was in college and having a good time when they would come to New Orleans and see me, of course, for Mardi Gras or something, he was worried about his older sister because he saw me living with that guy. He saw the black eye. He saw what I was doing to myself. I wanted it over, but that great fact, that little ember of life that's deep down within us that we all had because we got here. Now, maybe on another day I would have just said, who cares? But something inside said, get up, I want to live. And I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I was a victim of violent crime. I had a detective. I had all of it. And I was in there for 2 weeks, and I was ringing that bell for that morphine in the hospital because I needed something. And somebody wrote on my chart, addictive behavior. What? No one gave me any more of that stuff. Addictive behavior. I can't. There's no talking going on. I'm drinking everything through a straw, whatever they're trying to feed me. I'm, like, out of it. And this guy from Barney's Beanery, that bar, who knew that girl, Chris, who was in A&A, that we all gave the big toast to, came all the way out to help me out and to give me a place to stay because he had heard what had happened to me from West Los Angeles. So he was kind of, I don't know how he really got involved other than I think he felt sorry for me and gave me a place to sleep on his couch because he knew I had to go back to court. They had caught these people. It was Palm Springs when it was smaller, so it was not something they wanted to happen in their town. And I had this newspaper article in my pocket when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew you were going to say, oh my God, what the hell happened to you? But nobody did. They just said, look at her, she looks tired, maybe she'll make it. Or look at her, she looks like she's been through a lot. We're glad you're here, kid, you know. It looks like you've had enough, you know. They would say things like that to me. And having a wired jaw, I couldn't talk for 3 months, so it was kind of a blessing. You didn't hear anything I said in my head. But that day that he said I had to leave, that I was depressing him, this guy, and I thought, what? He was buying me cheap red wine, go off to work, I'd stick that straw in that bottle and I would stick it through the place where the tooth had been kicked out and I would suck on that cheap red wine. And there was no more, let's go start over in Arizona, they got drive-through liquor stores, you know, there was no more seeking. I was tired. I was really bone tired. And that's the day I called my mom, August 20th. And she said, Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. And my mother didn't know. When she got the call from this hospital, the girl didn't tell her what hospital I was in. So she didn't know what shape I was in for 2 nights until my sister in New York found what hospital I was in by calling hospitals in California. My mother didn't sleep at night for 2 nights because of that. And my mother slept at night in Alcoholics Anonymous from the moment I got sober with you. She was one of those 10 people whose lives got better because I sat with you. So there I am, this phone number, calling this number, we had to call somebody else. And she was like, this woman, Suzanne Selby, was right on it. She said, oh good, sit. She knew what liquor store is, and even though nobody could understand me, they knew the Duck Pond Liquor Store because it was alcoholic liquor store. They sold after hours out the back. They delivered after hours. Every alcoholic, I guess, in the neighborhood, so she could tell, oh, it's a Duck Pond. She knew exactly where I was. She didn't miss a beat. She said, put your drink down, put your joint down, go sit on the steps. I know where the steps are. Go sit right there on the steps by that. It's like, I didn't know all this. She's right here. It was scary. It was like, oh my, I don't even know I'm coming to AA. I'm just supposed to sit there and these girls are going to come get me. And I'm going to have a place to sleep tonight. And this car pulls up and it's a yellow Volkswagen. They stick me in the back and there's no way to get out of a Volkswagen in the back. I am unbathed. I am detoxing from alcohol. And those girls were sincere. And I didn't realize it. See, they moved me out of that
that liquor store after about two nights after they found the floor for me to sleep on. Someone gave me a sleeping bag. I don't even know I'm being taken care of. I'm just being shoveled around because I am, like, looking at the floor, and I'm a big mope, a big mope. I don't even look at you in the eye. But I don't know that. But these girls sat there. The sponsor said, now you wait for the lights of the liquor store to turn off before you send her upstairs. And in the back of a Volkswagen in August with a detoxing, unwashed alcoholic, that's sincere. That's sincere. When I smell, I love that stale smell of alcohol, man. If there's one in the room, let me sniff you tonight because it gets my fired up, you know? It's just, a newcomer in the room, you know? Where is it? I can smell. It's like Tiffany perfume when I hit the door. I love those crowded elevators on Monday morning. There's always one, you know? It's like, oh, who had the fun always hit? Who is it? Let me see. And I this one I followed around for a while, and then she just was like, I got her to actually give me her name and to talk with me a little bit, but she's gone. I think she got fired, so. But, you know, I love that smell. We don't get it enough here. Everybody comes in all cleaned up, you know. I like that detoxing smell. It makes me happy. And I sat on the plane. I always get the one on the plane, too, you know. And they're still drinking, you know. You sure you don't want one? Let me, but no, it's okay. I'm fine, you know. And I had one kind of stalking me for a while. What do you do that you don't drink? I don't get it that you don't drink, but I think he fell off, too, so. Anyway, you just try to be part of the force for good in the world. Who knows? You know, it's a ripple effect. Every day we have a little Zen stone. I know you newcomers and people that haven't been through the steps that you got a big mud clot, you're thrown into the spring of life, well, you know, making waves and clot, you know, making it all murky in there. But after a while, you kind of get a little Zen stone in your life and you kind of whip it into the, every day you get a fresh pond, a nice clear pond. And every day I try to take my little Zen stone after my morning meditation and just kind of whip it into the little pond and let it make some ripples. And if you're really awake, every once in a while you get to see a ripple hit the shore. Every once in a while you get to see something that had something that had something that had something, and there it is in front of you. And it's like, that's so exciting. I love that. Because if I'm working up the world, it's gonna make waves. You know, it's gonna go somewhere. If I'm acting like a jerk out there and not practicing my principle and all those affairs, guess who goes to bed with it? Me. You know, what good am I to that newcomer who's calling me? What good am I if I'm supposed to show up and be of service? What good am I if I'm, you know, supposed to be part of the force for good, whether they know it or not? Whether they know it or not. I get to go to bed with my head on the pillow knowing I did the best I could most days now. Most days, I want to do more. I wish there were more hours in the day. I want to do more. There's something inside of me that just wants to do more. Not for me, but for you and the people about me. Because that's what it says on page 77, and that's what I've been seeking my whole life. It says our real purpose. Oh, there it is. I have been looking for my real purpose my whole life. 7 years sober, I kind of woke up to my real purpose. And that's where it is. It's right there. Right there at amends. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves. And we all know, if you've been around a while, a lot of work that takes to fit yourself daily. To be of maximum service. It doesn't say minimum. It doesn't say what you did yesterday. It says maximum. Do as much as you can. To God, first of all. And the people about us. And it doesn't just say to the people of AA. Really? I wouldn't, you know, if you weren't in AA before, I wouldn't even want to hang out with you or be with you or be nice to you. It's like, you're not in AA up here. You know, it's just like, I wanted to have a sighting. Where's the sighting? Oh, there's somebody I know. I'll go be nice to them, you know, out in the world. But that's what Chuck C. used to talk about. He used to talk about it rains on the just and the unjust, and everybody gets a shot. Everybody gets a shot. So everybody gets my smile when I walk out at lunch. Whether I like your color, like your mustache, whatever, you look like a lawyer, whatever, you know, I'm going to smile at everybody. And I have a really good day when I can do that. Now I'm the kind of person where people sometimes smile at me first, and it's like, oh my God, just smile at me first. It's very exciting, you know, so that's my job, and that's my purpose. And to keep myself fit takes a lot of work, and a lot of step work, and a lot of amends, and a lot of defects of character, a lot of facing myself, and a lot of giving it away, and a lot of sitting with my God, and a lot of giving it away, a lot of giving it away. That's my job, and I've got to keep that well fresh and keep the water flowing. And that's how I come to be with you, because my feet are firmly planted in Alcoholics Anonymous, with commitment, consistency, answering my own phone, that kind of thing. Calling my sponsor. If you guys don't know your sponsor's number, put your cell phone away and try to write it down. You lose that phone, you lose the number. Now I dial, I hit the buttons, I do it. And I say dial around here, people look at you like, huh? But put your cell phone away. See if you remember your sponsor's phone number. It's very important, it's a lifeline. It's a lifeline for me. And so that's, you know, I started with you and that's been my, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my life today. It's hard. Life is hard, you know, bills and taxes and vet bills and, you know, people dying and cancer and all kinds of stuff. And but there's joy, 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 because I come sit with you and there's a solution for everything that is based on love, that is based on God, whatever your God is. And what a relief to know that. And you guys get my voice down. And it doesn't say let's party. It says let's be of service. Let's help the world. And that's the one thing we can do as alcoholics to save another alcoholic, where I can't go pull in one of those, you know, political people or any of that and say sit down and save this life, because that's an alcoholic sitting in front of you. Can't do it. We've been blessed with that gift, and that's our job, to change the world, is to help another alcoholic, to save a life. And there might be a hook in you that only that person will hear. That only that, like my first meeting, when I sat there and I was in this church not knowing what was going on, not realizing anything, the man at the podium hooked me because I thought I was at a church service. I had no idea. Somebody raised my hand for me. I didn't know that they knew I was new. I had no idea how they knew that even. And, you know, some man said, take your backpack and put it on the floor and stay with us for 30 days. And then he walked away and came back and he said, no, you look really tired. Stay with us for 90 days. And I thought, that was nice. He invited me longer. You know, that's all I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, I'm at a church service. I don't know I'm at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, until at the end some man came up and brought me the book. But the speaker was speaking, and I'm thinking this is the priest, or whether, not the priest, but the minister. And now I'm thinking, oh, pretty soon they're going to ask me, well, how I got here, and what you know, what I have to talk about. And oh, I was just really tired. I was sitting there, and he said, he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. And I went, oh, he hooked me. I looked around, I went, oh, spaceship people. Spaceship people. He hooked me. He got my attention. And it was like I took a breath, I opened my eyes. And then the man brought me the big book at the end of the meeting, brought my name. He got my name out of me. He wrote it in pencil where I was and the date, August 20th, 1975. And I still have Maurice Dalitow's. He's been gone a long time. I still have his handwriting in my big book in pencil. I thought that was great. I have a little resentment too, because I got sober when there was the second edition big book. So I had this sponsor that I was having a hard time. She said, I'll go home and read page 449. You better learn how to accept things. And so I went home and I read page 449, and then the second edition is Joe's Woes. It's not Dr. Paul's acceptance speech, you know? So I'm going home and I'm reading Joe's Woes about the dollar bill and how he stole it from his wife, and I'm thinking, how is this acceptance? I don't get it. I'm too stupid for AA. Oh, my God. But I'm not going to tell her. I'm going to keep reading it, keep reading it, keep reading it. And she said, did you read that? I said, yeah, I read it. She said, okay, good. How's it going? Going good, you know. 2 years I didn't know. 2 years until I finally got a third edition, and I'm thumbing through one day, and I went, holy crap, oh no. You got to ask questions. It's okay to ask questions. So I thought that was just, oh my God, my pride was still there. And you know, I mean, and I want to talk briefly because I know you guys are, it's like, I know it's a little before 8. And my first third step, I did it with my sponsor, and it was embarrassing, and I didn't want God to know where I was still, and I'm still wired up, and she's still so happy and hugging me, and I don't feel anything, and she won't get her arms off me, and Janet was scary. She had big long nails, and she laughed like a duck, quack, 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 really, and she was like, oh, she was kind of scary. I had her for 5 years, but so she was hugging me and so happy we had done this third step, and it was like, I don't feel anything. I don't know what this is about, but, you know, I'm on my knees. This is embarrassing, and she's hugging me, and she's so happy. And then I started to feel good. I started to feel good with what was happening, I thought, oh my God, I must be gay. I think I love my sponsor. And that's the way my emotions were. My emotions were a little screwed up. And so she said, well, don't make any decisions in your first year. That are major. So we didn't care about that. This made a noise. Do I have to care? Billy Wonka? Is that okay? Everything's good? Okay. Billy Wonka in the Fudge Factory, I'd be in trouble if I lived that far. Okay, keep talking. Got it. I can do that. That I know how to do. So I just want to see if you have any fudge up here. Okay, not yet. So my fourth step was done. I went home, made amends to my family after 1 year. They met my husband-to-be. They were really happy. They liked him. He was nice to me. So that was good. My dad came and walked me down the aisle. 2 years and 2 months sober, and he met all of you, bought the big book, thought you guys were great. We had an eye-to-eye moment at my wedding because somebody took a picture. First time in years. And I had another sponsor at about 5 years, and I called her one day, and she said, it's time you made financial amends to your father. You got a better job now. You're making some money. It's like, how did she know about all those financial amends? I didn't talk to her about that. We didn't discuss it. I'm calling you for another reason, but you're bringing this up now, really? And so I, of course, with my sponsor, I said, okay, that's what I say. And she said, call your dad and ask him how much money you owe him. Okay, and he was ready for me. He had read the big book, he had done a calculator page, and he had it on page 78, 79, which says most alcoholics owe money. My mother said he had the bottom line, it was a calculator page with the bottom line circled in red. My dad's a businessman. My brother said, I saw your dossier out there. It was very thick. So I called her back and I said, oh my God, he's too fast and it's too high. You know, it's like, so she laughed and said, well, call him back in 2 days and see if he'll accept your payment terms. And we talked about payment terms. So I called him back in 2 days and he accepted my payment terms. I called her back and said, okay, we're on. He accepted. And she said, okay, then don't be late with that check because you may be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous your father ever sees. And Bill and Bob are watching. They pulled that on me a couple of times. Bill and Bob are watching. Oh my God, that just gives me the shivers to stand up straight and tall and, you know, hold my stomach in and just my shoulders back. And Bill and Bob are watching. And that'd be a really good example, you know, like the whole thing. It was good. And so she said, but see, I have a sponsor that had been down the road that wants more for me than I think I can have. And what she said was, I don't want you to send the cold hard cash alone in the envelope. I want you to tell your dad about your life, put a note in that envelope with the money. And I argued a little bit, but she said, I don't care. I have a men's older sister, Nurse Sally, in Alaska, and a brother with a doctorate. Alcoholic in Southern California, going to jail panel? Sure, I'll write it all down and give it to my dad. Yeah, he'll be really excited to get that. Mm-hmm. She said, I don't care. You send a note with that, and don't be late, because Bill and Bob are watching. So, how's it going? Yeah, did you do it on time? Yeah, did you send a note? Yeah. And then she was just on time. And she would check up periodically with me that I'd done it. And then it seemed like the note turned into a letter, and the letter turned into Hallmark cards, and Father's Day was easier, and remembering his birthday was easier, and going home and sitting with him in the same car, or having breakfast with him alone at the table, or hanging out with him at the hardware store, or going to the A&W was all easier. It was getting easier, and I didn't even realize it. It was that checking that note and that checking that note on time. Because of consistency in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was almost Christmas, and it was a day after Christmas, actually. I was still married to Al, and I was 5 years sober. It was, no, I was
going on 10 years sober. It was right before my marriage fell apart. It was the Christmas. I got the saxophone for Christmas, so big gift, leaving you shortly. put it on your credit card. There you go. That was interesting. But my father called me and he said, almost 5 years of those notes my dad got. And he said, Merry Christmas, I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. And my father and I got to heal because that sponsor knew it. I didn't believe it, but that sponsor knew it could happen. And you know what's redemption for my father? You know what amends is all about? It's not for me to get the forgiveness. It's for me to give the forgiveness. It's for them to have the joy of me coming in their life again. It's for them to have the ease with which I can sit there and let them be themselves. It's for them to have the faith that their daughter's okay. My brother said they used to talk about me that she because it was anonymous. I mean, they didn't really know much about it. So I was the example here of how to live it. And when my marriage fell apart, and I, long story, but you know, he picked the newcomer in the room, he pregnant and married in that order. I was mad at all of you. My sponsor came back from Paris with smoking pot, giving up 21 years. Clancy ended up being my sponsor because I was scared to death. I was 10 years sober and destroyed and scared to death. And I ended up at his door saying, I don't like you. I don't know if you like me, but I need help. And he said, we'll try. And we've had over 30 years of trying, and it's working out pretty good. But what happened was, you know, that my car died. I called my dad. I mean, they were just disappointed and sad that the marriage fell apart and all of that because they had watched my son be born. They watched him be christened. He got to be christened in my grandpa's christening gown from Czechoslovakia, and it was pretty awesome. And, you know, Sister Sheila, and we went to the Mass and all of that Catholic stuff that I can come and go. I can come and go anywhere because God is within me. God is in my heart. God is in love. Love, love, love. It's all about love. Powerful stuff, love. It's healing. It gives redemption. It gives freedom. And it gets very peaceful and joyful. And my dad called me back after my car died, and he said, your mother and I went to the bank the other day, and the banker has a car. And it's an extra car. And it's got 7,000 miles on it, and your mother and I are driving it out for you. I took a car in my disease. The slate was clean. Chuck C used to talk about rubbing out the record. The slate was clean. And my dad got to be my father to his daughter in trouble who needed a car with his little grandson. He didn't have to look at my mother and go, we've helped her and we can't now. He would have said, we got a car. We're driving it out, your mom and I. And they drove it out from Iowa to California, and I got a Ford Fairlane with deer whistles on it. It was pretty awesome. And people used to go, what are those things? And I would just say, you know what? Those are my beam me up whistles for the mothership. That was redemption for my dad. He got to be my dad because of the amends of Alcoholics Anonymous. Powerful. The Sister Sheila thing, I just want to tell you this because my son got kicked out of the Lutheran school. And Lee's known my son since he was little, and I've known his kids since they were little. I mean, we've watched each other grow up, not just the kids, but us. I mean, our lives are good today. Look around, you know, our lives are good today. And so he got kicked out of the Lutherans, and I called my sponsor, and I'm crying, and he said, take him to Sister Sheila. So we ended up at this Catholic school where, guess what they have? For 8 years, I worked at that Catholic school for the school carnival at the end. It was my way to make amends. That was on my list. I had no way to make amends. The universe gave me a way to make amends, and that's what I did. I got to work that carnival for 8 years until I felt it was over, and I got to buy ride tickets, and I got to do everything I could for those kids that I ripped off with the carnival that I may never see again. I'm a blackout drinker, so I get the privilege every single day to be awake and to be of service for the world today, and I'm a peaceful person without my tequila, without my insanity. I have a broken, open heart. My dad got killed in 99. My mother passed away last August 29th. The love of my life I got to meet 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days after my divorce. But who's counting, right? You know, it's been 5 years he's been gone of malignant melanoma. And we had that day where the sitting in front of a doctor, and he told us what it was, and we looked at each other, and he said, you have 7 months. And we both looked at each other and said, he said 7 years, right? He said 7 years, right? And 7 months. I'll tell you, that's a day. And we traveled and had fun, and he didn't feel good, and he did clinical trials, and he seated our home group every Wednesday night because he needed a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't want to talk about his cancer. He didn't want to talk about how he felt. He wanted to talk about the solution to life. It's powerful stuff watching him go through that. And, well, sorry. I am so happy I knew that man, and it's within 24 years. He made a huge difference in my son's life. That's why my son's working in Paris right now, is because that man, because that son's father was not a part of his development as a human being in the world, and my Casey was. And that I acknowledge that because my son is doing well in business because my man taught him that. And I backed off and let them. You know what it's like, right? The first time they're playing Legos together, he's not doing it right with my son. I got to get in there and get in the middle and tell him he's not doing it right. And he said to me, you know, as he said to me, because we're program people, he said, you know what? Every time I try to get a relationship going with your son, you're in the way. And I heard him. So they would be in there playing Legos or whatever, and he's not doing it right. I would hang on to the kitchen sink and not move. And I've had so many awarenesses like that to let life happen without me getting in the middle of it. I'm a double Leo, man. I am in there, and I am strong, and I know that about me. And I have learned how to back it off and have the power be in my actions. My actions of living life and how I do it. And I'm going to end with this story because this is why Bill and Bob are watching, is that my mother told me my dad 12-stepped the town drunk. This is after my father's gone, a couple years after my dad's gone, that my father told the town drunk that came to my dad's house because he always borrowed a bottle. And when I was in high school, and if John was borrowing a bottle from my dad because my dad had a business and had a bar, I would tell my dad John was here and took two bottles because I got one. So I'm so glad that John got sober, that I got to make amends to him too. But John came to my dad, and my dad said, you're an alcoholic like my daughter. Here's the book that my dad had gotten in California. Maybe it'll help you. It helped her. It's not Mary's fault, his wife. You're an alcoholic. Here's the book. John got sober. And my mother told me that, and I didn't know that. So I was talking, months later somewhere in Thousand Oaks on a rainy night where I had no carpool, and I barely got there, and I'm pissed off, and it's a Thursday night, and I'm tired. But I said yes, so I'll show up, and Bill and Bob are watching. I'll pinch my cheek and put on my lipstick and straighten my dress and show up and do what I'm supposed to do because it's not about me, thank God. And I showed up, and I mentioned the town drunk, and I mentioned that my dad gave him the book. And after the meeting, this girl came up who looked familiar, and I thought, who are you? You know, she said, can I talk to you? And she told me who she was, and I went, oh, my God, I used to babysit you from Lisbon, Iowa. You're here? And I looked at her. I said, sorry about the pot. What can I do, you know? I mean, more amends, right? And she said to me, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here with 2 years of sobriety, and my Uncle John is still sober. And I went home to a family reunion 2 years ago. My Uncle John 12-stepped me, and I have 2 years. Ripples. That was a big hug from my dad. We don't know who's watching. We don't know what it's all about. I just know my day was to come be with you, sit in the middle of this community of love and service because it's here. I can feel it. You've got it. So share it. Thank you so much.
Okay, our newcomers tonight.